News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, The Soundbox. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 18th of March, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob 110.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we'll be bringing you an entire show full of news and information and fun stuff. And let us start with I'm sure you've all heard of this. Viacom, the owner of MTV, VH1, Comedy Central, and other cable networks, filed a $1 billion, that's billion with a B, lawsuit against video sharing site YouTube and its corporate owner, Google.
We're getting hooked up here, folks.
Yeah. The lawsuit marks a sharp escalation of long simmering tensions between Viacom and YouTube, and represents the biggest confrontation to date between a major media company and a hugely popular site, which Google bought in November for $1.7 billion. Last month, Viacom demanded that YouTube remove more than 100,000 unauthorized clips from its site. And since that time, the company has uncovered more than 50,000 additional unauthorized clips.
A quick search of YouTube's site turned up numerous clips from Viacom programs, including segments from Comedy Central, The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and Nickelodeon's SpongeBob SquarePants cartoon. In the lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court in New York, Viacom says YouTube harnessed technology to willfully infringe copyrights on a huge scale and has brazen disregard of intellectual property laws.
But it's no different than stealing music, which we've talked about. A lot of these programs say you can't, you know, take any portion, record it without this express permission of a particular company, and then just taking it and then publishing it up on some other place.
People are violating Google's and YouTube's terms of service, which says don't upload copyright material, and people don't care.
Right. The simple fact is they do own the copyright, and they have, and it's not that they're putting it up. That's not what people care about. What people care about is that what Viacom cares about is that Google is making money off of this. With the various thises and thats, the ads.
See, it's nice to have a centralized location. If I want to see clips of The Daily Show, I got to go to Cartoon Network. If I want to see clips of this, I go to that website. If I want to see clips of this, I have to go to this other website.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to have a central location, but you know they got to do it the right way.
Well, right, they're making money, and in fact, Viacom is not. That's really where the heart of the matter is. But the truth is, I guess, that they own the copyright and they can do what they want. I think it's short-sighted of them. I think more people will see things they never would have seen before if it gets serendipitously end up on YouTube. But I suppose
and several other media outlets have signed agreements with YouTube to put their video there.
Right. So I don't know. We'll see how that ends up. But it you know, on the one hand, $1 billion Google just has lying around, so that's it's not a big deal for them, but still, it's a tough problem. We'll see how it plays out. We'll keep you informed of that.
Everyone stop a second, because I got to switch my recording over to get the calls in.
All right.
All right, everyone, hum quietly to yourself. I got to make a new...
Sing solo, you can't hear me?
Right, exactly.
Line in.
Steve records the show, but he got caught short. Apparently, he didn't realize we started 5 after every day. So
it's like the old days. Remember, you used to come 10 after, he was early?
Yeah, right. But now he records the show every time. But that's all right. He's getting everything set up, and he's...
And everybody appreciates it.
Doesn't this thing save its settings from week to week, or...
Yeah, but I got to switch from the... It didn't see a line-in, so it automatically switches to the microphone. Now that I'm going back to the line-in to get the callers...
I see.
I have to reset it for the line-in.
All right.
Yeah.
Tell me when you're ready.
All right, let's see. Hitting record, and I'm still not getting a level.
All right,
well, let's
see. Boy, we're hardly trained here.
Luckily, he's on a Mac, so it's going to work the first time every time. Our first caller is... Ron from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Good morning, guys. Okay, I'm running XP Home, and I'm also
I got a Lexmark scanner all in one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to send images into my email, Netscape 7.2.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sending text works fine. Sending images, I get an error message of C:\Documents\Users\Locals\Temp\Images, and it says check directory settings. I have no idea.
Okay, what question?
Or anything.
One question for you, Ryan. When you're going to, you know, send this email, so you're typing up your text and all that, and then you go over to put in the picture. You do an attachment, right?
Right.
So you go over attachment, and you go to the folder where your photos are?
Yeah, where are you getting the pictures from that you're trying to attach to the email?
Well, if I scan them.
Yeah.
I scan them, and
you can,
I get a window on the screen that says rotate 90 degrees. Under that, I get a box that says attachments, and left of that, it says cancel.
Well, you have to save that scan
to
your hard drive
it.
First, then attach it to your email.
Yeah.
So the error message
is there a button right in the scanning software that says email this?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have to make a folder and save that to that folder.
Right. Yes. You've got to first save the image. You just can't scan it in on the fly.
Yeah, it's scanned in as a temp memory location somewhere.
Yeah.
There's no actual file to
attach
yet.
You've got to actually save it as a file name.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, you're halfway there. I mean, you're getting it there. You just got to do a save as or a save, and it'll allow you to put it in a permanent folder. Now, when you go out to email that, you know, whether it's within that program or whatever email program you're using, you can then save an attachment, and it'll go out.
Okay, so I'll make a new folder for that then.
Yeah, and put all your pictures in there, and then you can hit that. Once you've saved them, then you can hit that send button, and it'll send them.
Yeah, sometimes, though, you got to go into the software for the scanning program and change the default. So if you create a folder, say, called Photos, and you just point it, instead of it going to some other real buried down subdirectory, you just point it to this new folder called Photos.
Right. Well, he's already got my pictures because
yep,
he's in XP, so.
That should do it.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton. And me, Nick Francesco. It is 14 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham! I'm too sexy for my love. Too sexy for my love. Love's going to leave.
Yes, it's the Sound Bites theme song. I'm too sexy for dang near anything.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 19 minutes after the hour, it's the too sexy Sound Bites.
And that was Right Said Fred.
Of course it was.
Too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy it hurts.
Okay. All right. I think we're way past that now. Thank you. Thank you. Find something from this
Wait a minute. What do you mean we're way? What, you got a mouse in your pocket? Talk for yourself.
Yeah.
But we are happy to see you.
Yeah. All right. Google has adopted tighter privacy rules to make it more difficult to connect online search requests with the people making them, which is a thorny issue that has provoked a showdown with the U.S. government last year. Under the new provisions, under the new revisions, Google promised to wrap a cloak of anonymity around the vast amounts of information that the firm regularly collects about its millions of users around the world. Google believes it can provide more assurances of privacy by removing key pieces of identifying information from its system every 18 to 24 months. The timetable is designed to comply with a hodgepodge of laws around the world that dictate how long search engines are supposed to retain user information. Authorities still could demand to review personal information before Google purges it or take legal action seeking to force the company to keep the data beyond the new time limits. Privacy experts applauded Google's precautions as a major step in the right direction. Up until now, Google has kept every piece of information about everybody who's ever done a Google search that they could get their hands on. They do that mostly because of products like AdSense, where if you advertise with Google, you need to know certain pieces of information, like the general area somebody comes from, the sorts of things that they look up, et cetera, et cetera. Well, now the federal government required all the search engines to just blanket give them all their information, just in case someday some terrorist was stupid enough to log on and search for you know, pocket nukes.
Yeah.
Everybody complied except Google. Google fought the government. They are now saying that we're just going to make all those data disappear, so that the government couldn't get them anyway. So
well, the thing is, they're not going to disappear immediately. They're going to keep them for 18 months.
They're so complying with all the laws.
Yeah, everything you're doing on Google will stay there for 18 months. They'll be able to track you.
Right, right. But the point is, they won't be able to go back and say, what did this guy look at 4 years ago?
Right.
You know, which they can do now. So they're complying with all the laws.
What's his search history?
To the absolute minimum that they possibly can.
Like you say, being able to go through, you know, oh, yeah, he's been doing this for the past 4 years, a little bit at a time.
A pattern of behavior.
Yes.
Oh, very good. Our next caller is Henry from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Henry. What's your question?
Hello. I've been trying to install AVG. I've got two computers, successfully put it on one. And now the second one, I'm getting an error message, two error messages, one which says action failed for file avg7rsw.sys.
Okay.
Starting service. System cannot find the file specified. And the second error is rollback error. Action failed for file avgupsvc.exe. Removing file, access is denied.
One question for you, Henry. What version of Windows are you trying to put this on?
XP Pro. It's got all the updates.
Yeah, I should.
Are you the administrator?
Yes.
And this is the new 7.5 AVG download?
Correct.
And
build 446.
I'm wondering if he's got one of those nasty viruses that prevents you from loading an antivirus. Try running Stinger and see what happens.
I have been running McAfee all along. I'm sort of preparing to switch to AVG.
Yeah, there's no new one that'll block installing if you.
Unless it wasn't running all along.
As far as I know, it has.
If it's been doing the updates.
You said you have the new 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
Have you tried uninstalling the whole product? The AVG totally?
Yes, I did.
And then reinstall?
And then reinstalling it.
Yep.
At one point, one file was, I had trouble removing it from the AVG folder.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I don't know if it was archived or something. Anyway, I ended up removing that and getting rid of the file.
And it got rid of the whole folder?
Yes. I took out the folder.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean there isn't stuff still in the registry. Here's what I'm thinking. One of two things.
He took out the folder. He didn't run the uninstall first.
It was. I looked in the install under add remove.
Yeah.
Programs. It wasn't there.
Oh,
there's your problem. Yeah, it's not uninstalled properly.
Yeah, it still thinks it's in there. All right. If you've removed the folder, what you've also got to do is check in the MS config.
Okay.
If you go to MS config, go to the startup tab, and you can. See it listed in there, uninstall, you know, uncheck it from there, because if it's still there, it's trying to load it, you know, even though parts of it have been gone. And man, this is, I don't want to recommend it because it should go into the registry, but I don't like folks going in there and manually removing it.
I'm trying to check on AVG's website. They might have a manual remove instruction or a manual uninstaller.
But that's the issue. Since you weren't able to do an uninstall correctly, it's still loaded in there in the registry. And try MS config to see if it's still remnants of that are loaded, getting started.
If not, your best bet is to take it to a reputable dealer who can muck about in the registry.
Yeah, play
and
around.
And fix that for you, because it's not something we recommend the average person just do on their own.
Correct.
Okie doke. Our next caller is Allison on a cell phone. Welcome, Allison.
Hey guys,
you're pulled
you?
Over to the side of the road, right, Allison?
I actually got home, so I'm inside.
Excellent.
All right.
My question is, I am trying to hardwire a DSL cable to an older computer that does not have an Ethernet plug on the back of the computer, and I need to know what my options are there.
You got to get a network card for that machine.
You have to buy an Ethernet plug.
Yeah, they're like $15.
Do they have like an adapter? Because I have a USB. Plug on the back of their.
USB to Ethernet adapters. They generally don't work very well, and
especially on older 98 machines and all that.
Now, Allison, first, is this a desktop or a laptop?
Desktop.
Then, if you can open it up, and if there are places to plug cards in,
mm-hmm.
your best bet is to buy one of those $15 Ethernet cards.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Now,
a lot of the DSL routers also have a USB port on them, but then you have to configure your computer for Ethernet over USB, and that's not
well. That's
trivial.
Not easy,
especially
particularly
with
an older
Windows.
Machine. It's probably 1.1 USB, so you're not going to get any decent speed
and
out of it.
If she's using Windows 98, you also run into the issue that you got to get the patch for the USB drivers.
Right. So, Allison, your best bet: spend the $15, buy the card, buy the cable. So it's going to cost you a total of about $25 or $30, and you're on your way.
Remember when they used to come with the Ethernet cable? That was part of the DSL and cable installation.
Yeah.
But now so many computers have them already, they don't bother.
Exactly.
We had a lot of arguments from people who already had an Ethernet card in their computer, but still expected them to give them the Ethernet card when they installed the cable router. Well, it comes with an Ethernet card, right? So give it to me when you don't need it. I still want it. You don't need it.
What are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
Put it in my other computer.
Well, yeah. All right. Our next caller is Herman from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Herman. What's your question?
Yes, I have a Mac, and I'm trying to download some video that I have through a Dazzle Hollywood DV bridge. And I've used it for years, and all of a sudden now when I plug the DVD bridge into the computer, it wipes out the destination drive. And I've looked online. I thought maybe it was the bridge was bad. I looked online, and I see people complaining to Apple that this is happening on new bridges. So I don't know. Is this a common problem, or how can I work around it?
You plug in the bridge, and it erases your hard drive?
It just disappears, and then you try to get the hard drive back up again, and there's nothing on that doesn't appear.
But when you reboot it, it reappears?
Through some configuration, yes, it will reappear sometimes. Well, I tried one several times, and I can't get it up no matter what.
All righty. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 33 minutes after the hour, we have witnessed the meltdown of Glenn Lambert's. He's just gone now. Like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
I don't know what came over me.
I don't know what or why.
Your T-shirt. It says no. Is it okay if I read what it says on your T-shirt? No. No, I will not fix your computer. That's very good.
Is the shirt over that?
Oh, and the shirt says no, I will. Oh, that's the shirt too. All right.
The sweatshirt and the T-shirt.
In case you didn't get it the
both
first
say
time.
No, I will not fix your computer. Uh-huh.
Well, you know, doctors do that. You know, and psychiatrists as well. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love when you go to a party, you walk in and you know there's a doctor there, and you say, look, as long as I have you here, I've been having this pain, and just to see what their reaction
is. Yes, yes, I had that. I was at a party, and this guy was bugging me for like an hour with computer questions. I finally said, look, what do you do for a living? He said, I'm a doctor. He said, look, I got this pain right here. He said, call my office. I said, you know what? You too.
You too.
And I walked away, and like 10 minutes later, he came by and he apologized. He said, people do it to me all the time, and I hate it, and I did it to you, and I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I heard about one
doctor
that goes, oh, my God, that sounds horrible. You better call my office.
Did your office have the medical degree?
Yeah. Right. All right. Samsung said Wednesday that it has begun shipments of its first hybrid hard drive to selected OEMs, and the retail shipments would begin soon. The new MH80 2.5-inch hybrid drives for notebook PCs will be available in 80, 120, and 160 gigabyte capacities with either 128 megabytes or 256 megabytes of onboard flash memory. Although Microsoft has touted flash drives as a means to improve the performance of Vista, there are two types of flash drives. The first, the more common form, is known as something called ReadyBoost, where a specially formatted USB flash drive stores Windows system files, making boot cycles and restores from hibernation faster and more efficient, and God knows Vista needs that. Samsung, meanwhile, is part of the Hybrid Drive Alliance, which uses flash memory as a type of write cache for a hard disk drive. DRAM is commonly found in virtually all disk drives as a means to cache data being read from the disk. So it gets read from the disk into DRAM, and DRAM is faster for the computer to read from, and sends it into the machine. And then when you read data back out, it goes into that special area of memory and then gets written to the hard drive. Samsung says that their new technology offers a 50% reduction in boot and resume times. In addition, the drive consumes 70 to 90% less power than a traditional hard drive, which extends the battery life by 30 minutes before a recharge is needed in the average PC. So that's pretty neat.
That's a big helpful.
Yeah, that should be pretty neat. We'll be seeing those coming out soon. They say soon, and we'll find out to various OEMs. Oh, look at this. Here's Bob from Rochester who wants to know about OEMs. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Thanks for taking my call. I have a service contract with Dell because I bought one of their laptops. It's going to expire next year, and I'm contemplating to buy Vista, so I called up Dell, and I asked them, if I go to the store and buy Vista Business, will you still support me? And they said, no. And I said, why? And they said, because I have to buy Vista through them. And I said, why do I have to buy through you so I can have your support? He says, because the version you would get is OEM. And I'm like, I have no idea what this means. Does it mean like it's modified from what you get from the store?
No, but here's the deal. Microsoft sells Vista to you, and they support it.
Right, you got the support from the person you bought the thing from.
OEM stands for Original Equipment Manufacturer, which they're not 90% of the time. But the idea basically is that
they pretend to be one.
That they will support it if they sell it because they got the money for selling it.
Okay,
if you buy it from somebody, what?
It's not software modified.
No, it's all pretty much the same thing. Now, what might happen is Dell may muck about a little bit with the Vista disk that they get to remove drivers that they don't support and add special drivers for their laptops and stuff.
Mm.
So if you've got, for example, a Toshiba laptop and you buy a Toshiba OEM drive, trying to install that CD on a Dell laptop may mean you do not have some of the specialized drivers that Dell put on their OEM. Will Vista work? Probably. Will it be optimized? Probably not.
And that would typically be illegal in violation of their terms of license. You get a disk from Dell, it's only licensed for that one Dell. You cannot use it on another computer.
Right.
But one other important question, though. How old is this machine?
I bought it this past December.
Okay, and how much?
Probably too old.
And how much memory is in it?
There's 2 gig.
2 gig?
That's not bad.
You're good there.
How about your video card?
The video is a 256 NVIDIA.
Yep. And how much drive space?
100 gig.
Okay, all right, you're in position of doing it.
One of the things the companies do when they sell service contracts, I'm surprised Dell didn't offer to sell you an extended service contract.
Well, I have the contract. You know, it's only for a year, though.
Right, yeah, so they should offer to sell you an extended one for more time. But what a lot of companies do is they'll only, you know, sell you like a 3-year contract maximum. At the end of 3 years, you try to buy another one. They say no.
Yeah.
They want you to buy a new computer then. So they don't offer much longer extended contracts as sort of an incentive to make you buy a new computer.
Right.
Which is good for them and not necessarily good for the consumer.
So forces my hand to buy Vista from Dell now.
Right. If you want Vista supported by Dell.
If you buy a retail Vista in a retail store, Microsoft will support it.
But now you're making two sets of phone calls.
Yeah.
And pass the blame.
Right, and right. They'll each say it's the other one's fault.
He should be okay, though.
You should be okay to buy it from them. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 40 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Here we go. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
Oh, like shiki bomb bomb to you. It is 44 minutes after
bon
the
bon.
Hour. That's what I said.
You said bum bum.
I did not. Shake your bum bum. There you go.
Woo-hoo.
It's sound bites.
He's down. Get funky.
Get up. Take a shower. Windows One Care Live. Windows has announced today. Actually, this is yesterday. Which is when I write this stuff, that the next version of Windows Live One Care will be released for beta testing in late April. All current subscribers will receive the update automatically when the final version comes out in fall 2007. Pricing will remain unchanged at $49.95 per year for up to 3 PCs. While exact details aren't available yet, Microsoft provided a list of new features. Wireless connectivity security will help home users secure their Wi-Fi connections and protect privacy of wireless data transfers. New printer sharing support will help users connect printers to local networks. It also offers to the management of startup programs, including an option to speed boost time by automatically detecting rarely used startup programs and removing them from the startup sequence. Like Norton 360, OneCare will offer hosted online backup as an option. Norton 360 offers 2 gigabytes of free storage for any types of documents. OneCare's online backup is dedicated to photos and requires an additional fee. Interestingly, also yesterday at CeBIT. CeBIT is a computer show in Germany every year. A senior management for Microsoft, who requested a certain amount of anonymity, said that there is a problem with the underlying antivirus code of Live OneCare and admitted that security was just a little part of Microsoft. He said that the consumer security product is far from perfect and that pieces are actually missing. I cannot believe that a manager would say that about Microsoft. But there you have it. There you have it.
We'll see if somebody gets fired pretty soon.
Yeah, well, his name is Arno Edelman. He's Microsoft's European Business Security Project Manager. The code itself has pieces missing. He said, usually Microsoft doesn't develop products. We buy products. It's not a bad product, but bits and pieces are missing. That's great. It's a problem with the updates, and there's a problem with the implementation. Well, other than that, it's perfect. You can't run it, and you can't update it, but other than that, doggone it,
it works
perfect.
Good, yeah.
So there you are. Microsoft has their own little problems with OneCare. So for those of you who are using it, well, whatever. Our next caller is Pete from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Pete. What's your question?
Hi, how you doing?
PG, how are you?
I have a PC. I'm running Windows XP with it, and I'm planning on getting another PC, which I'm assuming will probably have Vista installed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to...
Well, it depends on where you get it.
Yeah,
sometimes you can still get XP.
And I still can, yeah.
Yeah, we have customers that want XP now because they don't want Vista until at least Service Pack 1 comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you buy a PC off the shelf with XP still in it? Or
it depends on where you go.
Yeah.
You can certainly buy them from Dave. I suspect you can buy them from Steve as well. If you're going to go to any of the big box stores, you're probably going to get Vista whether you want it or not.
Well, that would probably solve half the problem because the other question, part of the question was I'd like to network the two, preferably wireless network, and I was wondering if there would be any problems between the XP unit and the Vista unit.
We haven't seen any yet, but it is very early days yet, Pete.
I mean, I built a XP, I've got mostly XP in my shop, but I built a Vista box. It saw my whole network the minute I connected up to it. You know, I set up the sharings and everything else, and it was kind of easy.
Yeah. I was hoping to be seamless, painless, and...
Well, the theory is it's supposed to be.
That never happens.
Computer, you're talking computers. That's never painless. No pain, no gain.
There's at least the pain in the pocketbook.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Never painless and always time-consuming.
There you go. Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to avoid.
Yeah, good luck.
Okay, but you think the Vista to XP is no problem, or XP to XP is no problem?
Correct.
No, shouldn't be.
Okay.
Yeah, the biggest thing when you're looking for a new PC now is they're probably going to come with Vista, and a lot of the cheaper PCs are just going to be too underpowered. Yeah. You look at the $700, $800 PCs, there's not enough RAM, not enough video RAM, not enough hard drive space. It's going to be slow.
You aren't kidding.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
And I'm leaving.
Oh, I'm ready. We're back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites.
We should point out that the show cam is on, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
There you go.
What is the actual name of that song?
It's called Noxzema. The Stripper.
Yeah?
It's an Noxzema song.
When I DJ weddings and such, you play that when the groom is taking off the bride's garter.
Yeah.
Right. Whether you want to or not.
I've seen some vicious fights going after that garter.
Oh man.
I've seen brawls.
Yeah, I want to step out of the room. I want to step out of the room when the ladies get started.
Yeah.
All right, kiddies, run to your rooms, put on your footy jammies, grab your teddy bears. Steve and I are making hot cocoa. Gather around the floor in front of the rocking chair. If we can manage to wake him up. Clear! It's time for another story hour.
with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave.
Aluda.
Uncle Dave!
Hey, I got to warn folks. I mean, and folks, you got to take this seriously. You know, we've reported before throughout the years of folks having issues with their laptops and the batteries catching on fire. Well, I can honestly say I saw one. I had a machine in the shop just this past week that literally did catch on fire. I'm hoping within the week or so, I sent you two guys.
I love those pictures. Yeah. What great photos.
I'm going to post them up there, so give me about a week. I'll get the photos up there, folks. But if you don't think it can happen to you, I can't stress enough. If you've got a laptop and you're unsure, do a Google search and you just do, say it happens to be a Dell, and you go, Dell battery recall, and do a Google search. See if there is one. Because if there is one and you haven't checked it or taken the time, this individual didn't take the time to get around to switching out the battery. I mean, they'll send you another battery free. So I think this guy, this particular guy is going to be hosed because his recall was back in October of 2005.
Was Apple, HP, Dell, virtually every laptop manufacturer. And digital cameras are the other one, too.
Right. Oh, this is a theme song now on my phone. But you got to take the time, please, and check that battery because this fire literally toasted this machine, and I don't want to see anybody fry.
We have links for Apple, HP, and Dell in our link list.
Right. All right. All right. We're giving Uncle Dave his tranquilizer. We're putting him away for another week.
When you call my phone now, you don't get that stupid lady saying it. It just goes right to the song.
Congratulations.
Right. I love it.
It's technology at its finest.
Ring back tone.
All right, I think we've got time for one more call. At least we have Joe from Webster on the line. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Hi, I just bought a new Dell PC with Vista on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. The question concerns transferring files. My old machine was 10 years old. I had
ain't happening.
Okay. Well, that's my question.
Yeah, because what happened is, just so you folks all know, with Vista, with Windows XP, they had a file and transfer settings program. In Vista, that will only work if you're using Windows XP. It does not work with Windows 98, Windows ME, or Windows 2000. Well, 2000 it will only do the files only, not settings or anything else. So technically, it only works if you're going from XP to Vista. Anybody else with older machines, you got to do it by hand. They didn't move that over.
Yeah, well, copying files from one computer isn't too bad.
Yep.
Your email, which if you're using Outlook, is in a randomly named directory, is horrible.
Yeah, do an export.
Do an export and import. So it can be done, but you have to do it all manually.
It's time consuming, Joe, and I mean it's not easy like it used to be if you were on 98 going to XP.
Well, I'm cut 95.
Oh, you forget it. That email. Yeah.
Somebody's probably going to make a program to do that.
Okay. How long do you envision before it takes to do that?
I wouldn't hold my breath. Maybe another year or two.
I'd say maybe 6 months.
Oh, 6 months.
Yeah.
Okay, because Dell advised me to contact my software that I have, which I have Corel Quattro Pro.
Yeah.
Files, 1996, and he said, talk to them. He says there will be a patch kit out sometime to do this, but he says maybe.
See, they may and they may not. It depends, you know, like on. Quattro Pro, you know, that old from 95.
Watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Every week on Soundbites, we do a poll. Last week's poll was, of course, about daylight savings time. 314 of you voted, making it number 135 on the all-time hit list. Thank you very much. The question was, I had problems with daylight savings times. The number one answer, 54% of you said, no, I run Windows. 9%, no, I run Linux. 9%, no, I run a Mac. 8% said, yes, but only at work. 7%, no, we don't do DST. 7%, yes, but only at home. And 5% of you said, yes, at work and at home.
And there was no big news articles or anything else about earth-shattering, you know, systems going down or anything else. Everybody had plenty of time to react to it.
Well, at the back end, all of the programmers for all of the major vendors were a little nuts.
Oh, yeah.
And there were some serious problems. The Microsoft Exchange had problems all over the world. But the general operating system for the home user got updated
because
of the yeoman service by the people in the back room doing the program.
Yeah. So I had to manually change the clock on my server at work. Now, I haven't loaded the Daylight Savings Time update yet because I don't want to restart it. Because it's been running for 14 months without rebooting. I want to see how long it can go.
See, this is the fallacy that people do about uptime. Uptime does not include planned reboots.
Yeah, because you can tell it. This
it
is
doesn't. Yeah. I mean, that's been true since mainframe days.
Yep.
If you plan something and it's something that you're doing on purpose, plan
scheduled maintenance.
Scheduled maintenance doesn't count.
But my uptime command at the Unix prompt does.
Well, that's going to roll over at some point anyway. So
yeah, that's what I want to find out. What does it roll over?
We've had servers up for 2-3 years and they roll over.
It's a 32-bit register, isn't it?
Right.
So that's 2 to the 32nd seconds
mm-hmm. right.
or clock ticks.
Right. Yeah. This week's poll is about an interesting news item that we had. Dell and its boutique subsidiary Alienware began shipping 1 terabyte drives inside select desktop PCs this last week. Dell also said it's begun a YouTube-styled video time capsule consisting of the 1 terabyte Hitachi DeskStar 7K 1000 hard drive. Users can upload their video messages at studiodell.com and have them stored for 50 years on the drive. The new terabyte options are available on the XPS, Aurora, and Area 51 desktops. On the Alienware Area 51, the 1 terabyte option is an extra $320. Digital content use is exploding in the consumer market. With this 1 terabyte drive, a lifetime of memories, music, and other information can be made, stored, and shared with others, was the breathless announcement from one of the Dell shills, vice presidents. This type of capacity used to be available only to the largest corporations. With this spectacular announcement in hard drives and engineering in our systems, we are now able to bring it to consumers. Well, of course, they didn't actually create the drive. Hitachi did, but that's nice. So there you have all of the interesting things. Now, our poll says, what would you use a 1 terabyte drive to store? I mean, if you're going to have a terabyte of... Oh, we should probably go back beforehand and tell people what a terabyte is. The way this works is this. You have a bit. That's an off or an on, a yes or a no. That's what computers do.
Simplest.
8 bits is 1 byte, byte with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you.
Oh, you forgot nibble.
4 bits is a nibble. Yeah. I love that. Also with a Y. 1,024 bytes is a kilobyte. 1,024 kilobytes is a megabyte. 1,024 megabytes is a gigabyte. Here it comes. 1,024 gigabytes is a terabyte. So 1,000 gigabytes is a terabyte.
And then we...
1,000 terabytes is a petabyte. 1,000 petabytes is an exabyte.
No, it's an odabyte first?
Nope, exabyte. And then 1,000 exabytes is a yottabyte.
Yottabyte. And then odabyte. And then nanabyte.
Nanabyte. Yeah. Right, right. And so those are the things. So it's 1,000 gigabytes. So if you've got a 200 gigabyte hard drive, you're a fifth of the way to a terabyte. So that's the deal behind terabytes. And they now have drives, like having 5 200 gig hard drives. So the question is, what would you use a 1 terabyte drive to store? And the choices are, it's all about the music, baby. No, it's all about the videos. No, it's about both. Family photos. I have a big family. Linux distros. My secret candid photos of Steve Jobs, my vast database of game cheats, and Tara what?
So I knew her well.
I knew her well. So far, we've got 87 votes. No, it's about both, is winning, followed by Terra Watt, followed by Linux distros. Apparently only five of you have secret candid photos of Steve Jobs.
Now, the weird thing is that however big the hard drive is, it's never big enough.
It's never big enough.
Space will always fill.
My 60-gig iPod is full. My 250-gig main hard drive is full, so now I'm looking at a 500. And so, right. So do I just jump for the 1,000?
Go for the terabyte.
Well, how much is the 1,000? That's the big thing.
That's the big question.
Yeah, the 500-gig drives are under $500.
Yeah, this will be a tad over, I suspect.
Yeah, the 750 drive. Well, you can get, right now, there's a couple of companies, and we sell them. You can buy a terabyte external drive, which is two 500s, or actually four 250s.
Right.
It's about $800 for a terabyte.
Right. I suspect these are significantly more, but will come down quickly.
Yeah.
And the question is, do you actually want 1 terabyte drive?
Well, see, now the other side of that is, what do you back it up with?
Right.
Another terabyte drive.
Yes. Right.
If you got the four 250s, you can raid them.
Yep. See, I remember when like the 20 megabyte drive come out, and 20 megabytes, that's a whole lot of information. That'll take 20 floppies to back up.
Yeah, right.
Now, let's see, how many megabytes in a terabyte? That's a million, right?
So, right. All right, when you're done with taking the poll, you'll find underneath it a yellow box. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Oh, one of my faves. Where you can not only just click on a button, but you can actually enter your opinion. The question, of course, being, seriously, what do you need a 1 terabyte drive for? So far, we've got 9 people who've answered. All of them have been polite. Thank you very much. And when you're done with that, take a look around. I publish a newsletter at AskNick.com. It's a pretty fun thing. Lots of pretty cool information. If you click on newsletter, you'll see the last few subjects I covered, and then come on back to the Soundbites home site, where some of the coolest people on earth hang out in our forums. All right, we are back to the phones, and our next caller is Carrie from Wayland, New York. Welcome.
I almost got him.
Rob, we almost got you. Carrie from Wayland, New York. Welcome, Carrie. What's your question?
Hi. The name is wrong. It's Karen.
Oh, sorry, Karen.
It's okay.
We're blaming Rob for that.
question. I have some files that somehow or other got onto my computer that are pornographic.
Uh-huh.
And how can I delete it? I mean, if I went into it, you know, there's picture after picture after picture after picture, you know, showing what the files are.
What directory are they in? What folder are they in? Are they in a cache folder, or are they in my pictures?
Or temp?
I believe it's in my pictures.
Somebody downloaded them when they were on your computer.
Yeah. Then it's not my pictures. No, because there was no one around but me.
There is a general problem with porn sites, specifically if you mistype an address. You know, you meant to go to CNN and you hit CNV or something.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of porn sites will register misspellings, and so you accidentally go to a porn site, it pops up Windows or downloads cache files.
Mm-hmm.
But to actually download a picture, that usually has to be done manually.
Okay, well, no, I don't mean a picture. When the file opens, in the file are other files. Am I saying this right? And if, you know, if you go in, you get your pictures, normal pictures, and you click on one, that's the one you get. Okay, and this is how that is too. I can go in. I'm no good at computers.
Well, all right. At any rate, the deal here is that somehow you need to get rid of these. For each individual picture, of course, you can click once to highlight it and then hit the delete key. That'll put it in the trash.
Okay.
When you've gotten rid of all of them, you can empty the trash by right-clicking on the trash and selecting empty trash.
Okay.
However, that if they come back, you've got a deeper problem.
I was going to say, maybe her machine has been hijacked.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, boy.
It's possible that you've been hijacked. So try that, and if they go away for good, you win. But what I would suggest you do is head over to securitytango.com. I'm choking to death. Securitytango.com. And from there, click on the Let's Dance button, print out that page, and follow it step by step by step.
So when you're on on your desktop, when you're in a folder that has those pictures in it, you can just drag them to the recycle bin or right click and choose delete. Select a bunch of them at a time and delete them one at a time, or delete them all in batch. But if they start, what Nick is saying, if they start coming back, you have a deeper problem than someone.
Well, and I'm thinking, I don't know that I'd wait, frankly, because who knows what's going on. It can't hurt to dance the security tango, and once you've done that, whatever problem you've had should be gone, and throwing away the pictures you've already got would solve the problem.
Do you have a nephew by recently, or a friend of your son, and got into the computer and went somewhere that somewhere
but,
naughty?
So the deal is, it's either was put there on purpose by somebody else, or you've been hijacked, and I would suggest that you dance the tango just to make sure you're fairly clean before you do anything else. Okie doke?
She's sorry.
All righty. Man, that's a tough problem because you don't know who did what to who. Our next call is Thomas on a cell phone. Welcome, Thomas. What's your question? Thomas, are you pulled over on the side of the road? Thomas, are you there? Have we lost Thomas? Thomas?
Yep.
Thomas is gone. Our next caller is Bruce from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bruce. What's your question?
I have Windows XP. I've had for quite a while, and the machine's getting slower and slower, and I want to reload the XP. And I had a quick restore disk when I first installed it. And I've lost the quick restore disk after a few years. I'm trying to find out how can I replace the quick restore disk.
Well, you should be able to call the manufacturer of your computer, give them the serial number on the back of your machine, and they will send you, I suspect for a charge, a new restore disk. But if you restore your machine to the way it was when it first came, you will lose everything you've put on the machine since then. All your documents, any new programs you put on, everything gone.
Emails,
everything gone.
Security updates. So you might be better off trying to isolate the cause of why your machine is running slow. You know, is the hard drive getting full? Do you have not enough memory for what you're trying to do with it these days? But you can get the quick restore disk back from the original manufacturer. They're usually $30-$40. Sometimes you
can make them too. There's a directory in there for you to make your own. I'm seeing more and more companies not including them with the system that you got to make your own.
And no one has made the disks until after the computer crashes, and then you can't make the disk because the computer crashed.
But at any rate, Bruce, I would suggest you could probably bring it to somebody like Dave or Steve. They do cleanings. They'll wipe out the temp files, and they'll tune the thing up, and they'll do whatever they have to do to clean it up. And that's probably, in the long run, better for you than wiping out the machine and risk losing stuff that you really want to keep. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham!
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 23 minutes after the hour, speaking of horrible mistakes...
You are just such a well-rounded individual. Entertainment, computers. Is there anything you don't know?
Yes.
What?
I don't know.
What he doesn't know, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. The only language...
AC in the sunshine,
I speak every language. The only language I don't speak is Greek. Go ahead, say something in any language.
It's Greek to me.
It's Greek to me? Right, exactly. All right. As data centers... This is pretty fascinating.
I thought this was cool.
As data centers become hotter and more dense with servers, there's a greater chance for fire. But there's equipment on the market that applies a well-known method of halting fire, starving it of oxygen. Only a few vendors are offering oxygen deprivation systems, but interest in the technology is growing. It involves pumping air that has such a low oxygen content that a fire can't start in the data center. Now, this is different from halon systems, which replace the air with halon, which would certainly stop any fire, but would also kill any human.
That was a great scene in Terminator 2, right? Walking through the data center with a halon blowing, and everyone's got their gas masks on, and Terminator just walks through it, blowing up things.
But the air is composed of about 21% oxygen, 78% nitrogen, 1% other gases. Fire needs the oxygen to burn, and lower percentages of oxygen makes it more difficult or impossible for a fire to start. For example, wood stops burning when the oxygen content falls to 17%, and plastic cables stop burning between 16 and 17%. There's a company called Wagner Alarm and Security Systems GmbH in Hanover, Germany. That's how I know it's Wagner, not Wagner. Wagner makes electric compressors that use a special membrane that removes some of the oxygen from the outside air, a system that the company cleverly calls oxyreduct. The excess oxygen is exhausted. The remaining nitrogen-rich air is pumped inside the data center. At 15% oxygen, it's safe for humans to enter. The lower oxygen content of the air is similar to being in an altitude of about 6,000 feet. So, for example, you can sit. They did this again at CeBIT, which is the German computer show that's going on right now. He was in this little sealed atrium, and they lowered the oxygen to 15%. He was fine, but he couldn't light a lighter.
Cool.
Fire, of course, poses a danger beyond the immediate equipment burning. Burning plastic components combined with moisture in the air to create an acidic vapor that can damage other equipment and, of course, human lungs. Smoke damage is just as costly for insurance companies as fire. So this pretty neat little thing actually pulls the oxygen out of the air, leaving enough to make it safe for humans, too little for a fire to start. I think that's the coolest thing I've heard about in a very, very long time.
On those hot summer days at college, the best place that we always went to was the computer room.
Computer room, yeah. It was
air conditioned.
Yeah, boy. Yeah. You aren't kidding. All right, we're back to the phones, and our next caller is Kevin from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Kevin. What's your question? Kevin?
Hello?
Yes.
The name is wrong. It's Thomas, but...
Sorry, Thomas.
It's all right. I had a question about Vista. I got three computers, and I was wondering if it's really wise to go to Vista or just to go to Linux or a secondary operating system.
That's a religious debate.
Yeah, right.
And how do you define wise?
Well, the question is this. How old are those machines?
I got a 2.5 gigahertz Celeron D with a gig of RAM and a Celeron 2 gigahertz laptop with 512 megs of RAM.
Celeron right there tells me no.
Yeah.
Vista will run badly. And more important than the speed of your processor is the width of the data bus, and Celeron just doesn't have it, and B, how good a graphics card you have. And you want at least a mid-level gaming video card, something with 256 meg of RAM or more, something that does very fast graphic, lots of fast polygons,
and
stuff like that.
And typically Celeron-based machines are cheap. Intended to be
inexpensive, the word you were looking for.
Yes, and often have shared video. They don't even have a video card.
Well, this is a custom built system, but as you said, right, the Celeron has a smaller bus, so I figured that.
Can you run it? Certainly. Should you run it? I don't know that you'll be happy.
Yeah.
With the experience you get from that machine. I've got it on a machine at work that's a 3 gigahertz processor, 4 gig of RAM, a decent video card, and I get an okay experience. You know,
I run Linux
on that thing, and it flies like a monkey, and it's great. But this thing, nothing.
Yeah.
Now, the other part of the question I had is, okay, if I did use it, would it be more recommended to just upgrade or actually wipe everything out and start fresh?
Well, we're finding that people who upgrade often bring their old problems along with them.
Especially if you've been upgrading several versions, 95 to 98 to XP to 2000, you know, whatever.
Right. So if you can, wiping your machine out and installing a clean version of Vista will give you the best chance at a decent experience.
And what some folks are doing also is getting a second hard drive, you know, and swapping out the hard drives. So you still got your XP on, you know, one hard drive and putting the Vista fresh on a new one.
So that if you ever want to go back, you can.
I can't believe they did that. You can't uninstall Vista and go back to XP.
Why would you want to? Why bother writing that code since no one would ever want to do that?
Why bother writing the code to prevent you from doing it?
All right, does that semi-answer your question, Thomas?
Hell yeah, thank you.
My pleasure. All right, our next caller.
He said he had three machines, XP, Vista, Linux, get a fourth machine with Mac. There you go.
You got one of each, and you're good to go. That works, certainly works for me. Our next caller is Tom from Fairport. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Hi. Unfortunately, I'm developing some carpal tunnel pretty extensively. And, you know, I do a lot of analysis using my computer for, you know, my business. And I'm looking for alternative input sources, such as voice or whatever. And I'm just wondering if, what your recommendations would be.
Well, I got to tell you that I really, so far, really like what Vista does. With that, it's built in. It's infinitely better than what they're doing under XP. So, if you, again, if you've got a machine that will run Vista, it's terrific.
The voice recognition.
The voice recognition. Second to that is what's going on in XP right now. There's a great program. There are programs, Dragon Dictate, which actually I think changed its name. No, they got sold, but I think they kept the name Dragon Dictate.
Yeah, sold to Nuance. So.
Right, right. And I think they kept Dragon Dictate as the name.
Yeah, because that's been around forever. Yeah.
So,
not Dragonfly?
Pardon?
Not Dragonfly?
Dragonfly?
Yeah, thought it was called Dragonfly.
Dragonfly, as far as I know, is a program like that lets you build online communities.
Well, there's actually there's two sides of speech. Do you want speech dictation where you talk and it types, or do you want speech control where your cursor moves, your menus opens, and things do like that? And some programs separate those two functions. But Dragon, naturally speaking, from Nuance, is the sort of the main voice recognition and dictation program for Windows, and Dragon Dictate is their dictation version of Dragon, naturally speaking.
Right.
And on the Mac side, we have IBM ViaVoice and iListen as well. Although we've had quite a few people, in fact, we're partnering with a company. They're doing Dragon Dictate on a Mac in Windows now that the Macs can do Windows.
Right. But I would suggest if you've got Vista already or if you've got XP already, certainly try the product that comes with it. It's free and it's a good place to start. If that does what you want it to do, you win. If not, check out Dragon at nuance.com, and Steve will have that online.
Right.
The big thing you have to remember is you've got to be patient, because whatever product you pick, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to have to train it. And the more you train it, first you're going to have to buy a decent microphone, and we suggest a headset with a microphone on it so that it's always at the same distance from your mouth. And then you can spend time training it. You spend 10 minutes training it, it's okay. You spend an hour training it, it's pretty doggone good. You spend a couple hours training it, and it's great. So that the choice is yours as to how patient you are in training.
And the Mac has speech control built in for controlling menus and functions with speech and opening programs.
So does Vista, but I hate the idea of that. I don't want somebody...
Speech dictation isn't. Yeah, the big thing with speech control is, what if the guy in the next cubicle says, computer, erase hard drive?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Or if somebody on television said, you mean he erased the hard drive?
Mm-hmm.
Boom, and then it's gone. So I'm not a big fan of that, but in terms of word processing and stuff like that, actually what's already in Windows works pretty doggone well. All right, so voice control. Our next caller is Ron from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Well, first I got to ask, where is that program in XP? Is it already loaded?
It should. Well, that's a lovely question.
I just searched for dictation. Nothing came up.
Well, it's in universal access in the Macintosh because it's considered an assistive technology for people that have trouble typing. Maybe it's in the same place in Windows.
Okay.
Do we have it? We don't have a Windows machine here, do we?
We don't have a Vista machine here.
No, but you're running XP, right, Ron?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually booting up the...
Wait a minute.
Oh, I can't do that.
Okay, well, meanwhile, I have a main question.
Narrator, there's one called Narrator.
Well, go ahead, ask your other question while my my virtual Windows session boots up under Linux, and we'll figure out what that is.
XP Home, systems clean of spyware and viruses, did check disk, tried it in safe mode, defrag will not complete. It always says there's a list of files it won't complete, hit details, when you hit details, it's empty. And what it does is leave a few red lines and a big white space between the blue and the blue.
Yeah, the problem there is something is running in the background. And it's touching the hard drive. And defrag will not finish if anything touches the hard drive while it's running. One of the things that you should be able to do is to start it up at boot time, right?
Yeah, I went into safe mode.
No, this is different.
It's before safe mode. you have to do it before safe mode or at command line only.
Okay.
Right.
So try it at command line only.
Right. That's kind of what you have to do, and that's where the problem with that
is. If not, it'd be what, bad sectors maybe?
It could be. If defrag doesn't work, you should do a check disk first.
Yeah, I did.
Check disk /R?
Well, I usually just run it, and then if it comes up with errors, I do /F. I like to see the errors that, you know.
But the thing of it is if you do /R, that'll do the, you know, on the reboot. And
check disk has the same problem that it can't run when something else is running, but it at least tells you, do you want to run it before the next boot? And it will, whereas the defrag doesn't say that.
Okay. All right. I'll give it a try.
As far as the other thing goes, if you go into Start, Control Panel, Speech, that's where you can set up voice recognition and text to speech or speech to text or whatever it is you're trying to do. So that's where you start.
The text to speech is kind of neat when you're writing proposals or reports or even email. Have your computer read your email to you, and it's a really great proofreader.
Yeah. All right, there we go. Our next caller is Jack from Farmington, New York. Welcome, Jack. What's your question?
Good morning. I've got a Toshiba A75 satellite, and I've got a problem with the sound. It started over the last 4 or 5 months. I have had intermittent sound coming in. Some emails would have sound, some would not. I've sent it back to Toshiba twice for another problem, keyboard locking up. They've sent it back. Since I've got it back, I don't have any sound. Even if I put a CD in, a DVD in, I have no sound at all.
I would send it, tell them and send it back to them.
Are you sure it's not just the volume turned down? We've seen that occasionally.
I've tried the volume up in every way I can.
I would send it back, talk to them, get them on the horn, and let them know that you've got an issue with the sound, that you got it back and now it's not working at all. Get it while it's still under warranty. And they'll correct it, because it could be a bad speaker. The speakers, when they took it apart and put it back together, since they did, you know, other things inside there, might have a ribbon cable or something else might have come loose or messed up.
Yeah, it's likely.
Have you tried external speakers?
No, I haven't tried externals. I can do that. I do have a headset I can plug
in.
Yeah, I would suggest you try that, and that'll prove whether or not they just left off a plug somewhere.
But the system knows it has audio hardware, and you have a volume control icon in the taskbar. Yeah, because I ran into a customer this week that brought their machine in because they were getting no audio. I go into the device manager, and every other audio device has got a bang on it. So I fixed that.
All right, our next caller is Chuck from East Rochester, New York. Welcome, Chuck. What's your question?
Gentlemen, I'm having a problem. Not being able to punch up WHAM or any other station I have heard of, which is on the net, and that problem may be due to a narrator on the XP. My daughter is telling me that I can get to it, but I have to go over to Listener, and it won't tell me whether I'm there or not.
Yeah, this is... And narrator does what? It's a text-to-speech program.
It fails to read some things that are on the screen.
Right, right, right. It may be. Narrator is one of the things for the visually impaired. So
yeah. I wish I could remember.
That's XP Pro.
Yeah, XP Pro. There is another program, I believe it's by IBM, that is a very good screen reader also. I mean, there's an expensive one called JAWS. But look into the IBM website. I think they've got some stuff there that is a very good screen reader also.
And should let you also be able to punch up any of the online radio shows. Listening to Wham! Online is actually a pretty neat thing when you can't get a good signal, you're indoors or whatever, in a building. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. In a filing Friday with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, Apple said 114,000 695 options issued between 97 and 2002 were erroneously assigned grant dates that preceded the finalization of those grants. Oops. As a result, the exercise prices of those stock options were lower than they would have been if the options had been dated when the grants were actually finalized. Because of that error, affected options exercised after 2005 are subject to federal income tax plus a 20% penalty and interest charge. Those who elect to have their options repriced at a higher level would avoid that tax liability. Let me put that in simple language. What happened was Apple issued some stock options to their people at a lower price than they should have. That was nice for the people, but it's what we call in America illegal. They were caught. Now they have to pay. Apple is basically saying, we have no idea what's going on. We're conducting our own internal probe. One of the people actually was Steve Jobs, but while Jobs was aware of procedural irregularities, he did not understand the accounting implications. I'm sorry, I think Steve Jobs is smart enough to have understood the accounting implications. Mm-hmm. I'm smart enough, and Steve Jobs is way smarter than I am.
I was just watching a Boston Legal the other day where Denny Crane got on the no-fly list.
Yeah, I saw that one.
And it was talking about, in their closing arguments, we should hire the Steves. You know, Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak. My iPod has 20,000 songs on it. Can't we fix this no-fly list? Let's hire the Steves. Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, Steve Ballmer. And I'm going, yeah.
Right, right. But basically the idea is, in the real world here, I think Steve Jobs was smart enough to get that. And whatever. But at any rate, they're all being investigated. Everybody is venal at some point. Everybody's subject to temptation. I'm sorry that they managed to get caught, but that's the way the world works. Our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Hello. This question is kind of just for fun. After reading a lot of forums on the internet and tech websites, a lot of people are not happy with Vista. What are the chances of Vista taking the same route as Millennium took?
You mean nobody wants it?
Yeah. Basically.
Well, yeah.
Well, one of Millennium's big problems was that it was rushed to market because no one was buying 2000 because it was too different than 98. So there wasn't a lot of thought put into Millennium. There weren't a lot of drivers available for it. So that's mostly why Millennium isn't good.
The only thing I can see, here's my only concern. When XP came out, it accomplished two things. One, you were no longer tied to the 128 meg memory constraint, and it introduced NTFS over FAT32. Two big concerns for users to switch from, say, Windows 98, Windows ME, those two, which were FAT32, to go over to XP because you gained so much. Now, going from that to Vista, I can't really say that they're, you know, granted it's got a great GUI, you know, you can, again, put more memory, it requires more memory, but so does XP, and it uses it. There's no big defining reason or compelling reason for IT places in that to make the jump over right now.
Even Microsoft is saying that most places they expect to wait a year. And in fact, Steve Ballmer in a speech said most people shouldn't move over to Vista right now. So we'll see what happens. In the long run, I'm sure it will win because
it's
Microsoft,
a cool operating system.
Microsoft doesn't make money if you don't buy Vista. And so they will make sure that at some point you buy it. But even they realize that right now is not quite time. It's an exceptionally good operating system.
Yeah.
But the big difference between it and XP is the eye candy. And if you don't need the eye candy right now, why get it? When they finish some of the other pieces, in particular when more drivers are available for more peripherals, because right now there's a whole bunch of stuff you own that will not work with Vista. Eventually that'll work, but not right now.
Wait for Service Pack 1.
At least. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 48 minutes after the hour. It's Meltdown on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 53 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites. Our next caller is Dick from Brockport, New York. Welcome, Dick. What's your question?
Yeah, hi. one, you're dealing with an idiot. I know nothing about this stuff. So we're going to try and keep it where we
need got four more of them here.
I've got Outlook Express, and I'd like to get something different than that, something that has a nice calendar along with it.
Calendars are usually separate programs.
Calendars are almost always separate programs.
Unless you go move up to Outlook, which has a personal calendar built into it, but there are other dangers involved in Outlook and Outlook Express.
Right. The Outlook will do that, but it's a big bloated program. I don't know of another
and
one.
It's expensive.
It's very expensive. Time and Chaos will do the calendar, but I don't think they do mail yet.
What about Google?
You could
do Google Mail, Google Calendar, Google Web Services. They have all these things together
on
the web.
I don't know that they integrate, though.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I haven't played with it.
Thunderbird has, Sunbird, I think it is, which is their calendar thing, but I don't think it integrates yet. This is a tough question. You want to be able to go back and forth and say, all right, I've got this. Somebody wants to have a meeting with me. Let's slam it over to the thing.
I just spoke to him this week, and we interviewed him last year, a local internet company, Blue Tie. You get email, integrated calendar, integrated tasks, integrated appointments, all integrated together into a single web interface. So that would work. And it's free if you do it on the internet, or $5 per person per month if you download it as POP on your own computer.
Yep. So check them out.
Right. There's a thing called Lightning. The Lightning program is Sunbird inside Mozilla, inside Thunderbird, but it's like it's 0.3 right now. So, yeah. So talk to the Blue Tie folks. It's probably your best bet. Our next caller, Keith from Mount Morris, New York.
Thank you. I'm having problems with my DVD drive. The minute I turn the computer on, the first thing that happens is that the tray pops out. And I tried to play a DVD this morning, and it won't play.
Probably easiest and cheapest thing to do is just go out and buy another DVD drive.
Well, isn't the tray popping out a virus?
There is a virus that does that.
But, no, I've seen it also when this happens, though. Quite often the drive is getting a false signal. Like anything else, you know, the price keeps dropping, so they're making them cheaper, and they will break faster. Right.
And you may
Has
have
it
never...
always done this?
It just started last week. I've only used the DVD drive about three times.
Yeah, you may have never used it before, but it's been on and running since you bought the computer.
Right. Here's the thing. Certainly, right now, this minute, you can run the security tango and check to see if you have a virus.
Right.
Beyond that, really, it comes down to replacing the DVD.
And they're not that expensive. $40, I think it is.
Yeah, right. They're not
a DVD RW.
Yeah, not much more for a DVD burner. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
In fact, it's kind of hard to find CD only reader onlys.
I stopped carrying them anymore because the price difference between a CD burner and a DVD burner was like $4.
Right.
It's like, why bother?
Right. All right, our next caller, Ed, from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Quick comment and a question. Those terabyte drives you're going to find in the future with higher and higher resolution cameras and larger databases.
Yes.
You're going to find those are going to be a godsend because you're going to be able to store so much data and be able to manipulate
it. Oh, I take four right now.
We're already seeing DV cameras coming with hard drives built instead of tape.
My question is kind of a funny one. I, back in the late 90s, bought a couple old Sony computers, were running ME, and I've never had any problems with them. But Sony had an interesting thing on it. I believe it's called iStation. It's a graphical user interface. It has like a floating window, ghost semi-transparent image. It's almost identical to what Vista's come out with now about 10 years later. And I find it kind of comical that Vista is claiming this is a new technology. I kind of wonder if this is one of the old... things like with Kodak and instant film and, stealing something from Polaroid.
Well, right. Those of us who have seen other operating systems are not impressed by any of the features in Vista because we've seen them all before. There's a Java desktop from Sun that did everything Vista does two years ago. So it's nothing new, but this is the first time that a mass market has seen this stuff. And so it looks new and innovative and different to most people. But you're absolutely right. I don't know that we actually have time for another call. We've only got about 40 seconds. I want to reiterate, I think Vista's a terrific operating system. Oh. I'm running it on a machine at work.
And same here. You know, and I mean, some of the other features are great.
But
like
it's just an operating system. Don't, you know, it's not a religious event. It's
but like I
just
said,
an operating
what's going
system.
To be confusing, and I'd like to see them do, is change it. So when you go to the start menu, they made it so different that a lot of simple end users, I mean, typical Joe users, you know, want it.